All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is American Vindicta. I would like to say that I hope everyone's having a very good day today, good week, that you're all being safe and you're having an enjoyable time this summer. But I'd like to give you some updates on what's going on around the country. And we're going to start off in my most favorite city, Portland. And I'm going to explain to you one of the reasons why the training that I'm going to be putting on in the first weekend of September, this Labor Day weekend, from the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, why this training is probably some of the most important training you'll do in your lifetime. And it's because of the escalation of crime, violent crime, in America. All right, we have an escalation of active shooters. We have an escalation of shootings. And it's not slowing down. And it'll probably get worse come midterm elections. And then it will definitely get worse come 2024 elections. Listen to this article right here from Fox News, wrote by Michael Lee. Portland police chief pleads with community to stop violence against officers. Now, when the police have to try and beg with the community to stop treating them so badly, something's wrong. And it's not with just the community. It's with the police. You see, the problem is when you have a bunch of left-wing, completely crazy, I don't know even what you want to call it, communistic people that are in charge of your government, and then they dictate everything that law enforcement does. Well, most of the good guys end up leaving and going to other departments. I know when I was there last time, they actually had people, you know, recruiting from Portland Police Bureau saying, you know, if you want to leave Portland, come to us and we'll start you off at a higher pay. As law enforcement, you have to understand this if you're going into the field, but if you're already there, you know that what I'm about to say. You accept the risk of what your job entails. It's going to be violent. It's going to be dangerous. You may die. You may see other people die. You will see people brutally maimed. You will see blood. You will see vomiting. You will see fecal matter and urine, and you'll see bloodborne pathogens. That will happen. Oh, by the way, being that it's Portland, you will see violent riots. So why is it that the Portland police chief, it used to be outlaw, the lady police chief whenever I was still working in that area, her name was Outlaw, and she was a political appointment, and she was a huge disappointment. And now we have a new police chief that's there. And, you know, I don't like this guy either. You know, there's no way in hell a police chief should be getting on Twitter or social media and saying, you need to be nicer to our officers. You can't expect that from a people who've gone completely crazy. You can't expect that from a terrorist training ground that is Portland, Oregon, or Eugene, or Salem, or any other city north of them in Washington, like Seattle. What Portland needs is not for a police chief to reach out to the community saying that, hey, you know, the community should back us and, you know, you should be there and help us whenever all these other bad things are happening. When, hey, for a while there, Portland police, you didn't back very many people. You know, hey, I was right there in the riots with you. Curse me if you want. I really don't care. But I saw just how many businesses closed down, and so did you. I saw how many different times Starbucks got, you know, vandalized or firebombed, or the banks that were in the city, or the mom-and-pop shops that were completely ran out of that city. I remember last time I was there, almost all of downtown Portland was boarded up. You know, you still had a couple vendors out there, a couple restaurants who, you know, dared to stay open. But, you know, how many different times did we have to see the formations of Antifa showing up, about to do their little direct action against Portland Police Bureau headquarters, and then it spills out from everywhere else because these idiots will get in a huge protest line, and as they're walking down the street, they vandalize everything in their path because they don't care it's not there. So I can't tell you how many cars I saw vandalized that were parked along the street from patrons at restaurants or people living in the downtown area, and their vehicles were vandalized. You know, they vandalized anything that was historic. If you owned a business and you didn't put up a Black Lives Matter flag, they vandalized you. If you didn't allow Antifa to harass you, they vandalized you. Wow, sounds quite a lot like the stormtroopers from Nazi Germany. Do you think back in World War II, the police were telling the communities in Germany to back them while Hitler's stormtroopers were going around harassing and killing Jews? And not just Jews. Anyone who disagreed with them. No, probably not, because they were already bought and paid for by that government. So people who wanted their retirement, who wanted their pension, who wanted to keep their jobs, didn't say anything. So they just allowed the madness to unfold. And you know what they eventually got? They eventually got their hands dirty and bloody. And eventually were told, you will go to ghettos, you will round people up, you will execute everyone on this side of the list, and on this side of the list, you will take them and put them on train cars and send them to the camps. That's what happens when you have a weak law enforcement. That's what happens when you have weak, corrupt leaders. And this is how it happens here in America. Listen to this. Portland's chief of police took to social media to plead with members of the community to stop violent acts against the city's officers after a string of violent incidents occurred over the past week. The violence, quote, "The violence shown last night toward officers and over the weekend is shocking and reprehensible." This says Portland Chief of Police Chuck Lovell, as he posted this on Tuesday on Twitter. In the last 4 days, officers have been shot at, had suspects fight with them, run over by a vehicle, and another almost run over. Well, you know what, Chief? You let that happen. You and your predecessors and that son of a bitch who is your mayor, Ted Wheeler, allowed this to happen. Ted Wheeler, in the middle of a giant domestic terrorism group, whenever I was there, protested against us in support of Antifa. So, the rot begins at the head, Chief. If you really want to redeem yourself, if you really want to redeem your city and your department, maybe some arrests need to be made at the mayoral level. Maybe some of the city council members need to be investigated and arrested for racketeering charges. And you know what I'm talking about, don't you, Chief? But you won't do it because you're part of the problem. I remember when you yourself were also appointed to lieutenant, and then from there, it went further and further and further. Now, look, there's a way to handle this. I don't believe we have to go Wyatt Earp on everybody and we need to buffalo every drunk man that stumbles out of a saloon. But if you don't back your officers, if you don't give them the tools that they need during the riots, if you don't unleash them, then you might as well put the dogs back in the kennels and not expect law and order. I say unleash the dogs of war. Let it happen. Let Portland get, let's just say, 96 hours of martial law for every civilian. Let's see how that works, because we're on the complete opposite of the scale now. And to the extent that the police chief says, please stop trying to hurt my officers. Your officers don't want to get hurt. They're hurt because of bad policies. It's not that they're not trained. I've worked with, God, I don't know how many of them. Good guys. Good guys and gals standing out there on the line, risking their lives, tired of the bullshit. However, because of policies, just like whenever you disbanded the Rapid Reaction Force, the RRT force, you know, what did you expect? If you don't have a rapid action force anymore, then you're going to have to call SWAT to every scenario. If you don't have a mobile field force, which is the riot control force that police use, then you are going to be hampered when you don't have that special weapons and tactics team to handle the riots. And that's why Portland has devolved into more or less a real-life Gotham City from Batman. You know, even when I was there, and I was only temporarily deployed there for almost a freaking year, but me and all my counterparts, we would go downtown, we'd go visit the areas, we would go and eat at some of the restaurants, and we had our damn guns on us. And we saw the madness walking around, you know, without our uniform on. We saw the amount of naked, homeless people. God, I'll never forget. We had just got off shift. It was probably about 4 or 5 in the morning. And by the way, typically our shift ends at midnight. So we get back around 4 or 5 in the morning because we had made multiple arrests the night prior while they were trying to attack the immigration building. And we were told, hey, because I was a supervisor at the time, hey, get your guys up and tell them to be, you know, downtown at a certain time because there's a certain event that's about to kick off and we need to be ready for it. So I'm like, oh my God, we've had like 4 hours of sleep. My guys are tired. Dangerously tired because we've been doing this for over a week now. And you know, this is the thing people don't understand. When you live off of energy drinks, and I'm not going to talk about the tragedies that happened while we were there to this extent, but we did lose one officer there to a heart attack because he, you know, he drank so many energy drinks just to stay awake, just to make sure he could do his job. You know, and there were other tragedies that happened there that not very many people know. You know, this stuff weighs on you a lot. And the chanting, my God, the chanting, Black Lives Matter, all cops are bastards. When you hear that for 5 or 6 hours straight, for 2 or 3 weeks straight, it starts to echo in your brain. I just remember like sitting there in the shower lathering up, just saying, you know, all cops are bastards. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't get it out of my head. And we all complained about it. You know, it's psychological warfare. It works. It does work. So anyways, this one day, we're having to respond back to the city, get ready for some big event that's about to go down. And all cars were stopped. And I was leading a convoy. And I'm trying to figure out what is going on. And I had about 20 guys on my team, so it's quite a long convoy. And I'm like, what is going on, guys? Why can't we push over this bridge? Because half of us were stuck over the bridge trying to get into downtown Portland. Well, there was a, how do I say this gracefully, a transient woman. Transient is the word they use instead of homeless. There's a transient woman, naked, attacking cars, toothless. I thought, literally, I was looking at something from The Walking Dead. She was so strung out, so strung out on drugs, and it was so maddening to see. But when you really think about it, so sad to understand that instead of helping these people, their government, their local government gives them needles. Because they say, well, we know that you're going to use anyways. So here's free needles. And so as we're all trying to get by this woman, I mean, I don't know what she was high on. Probably fentanyl, probably heroin or crack. As we drive by, she's hissing and growling and hitting cars. And, you know, even law enforcement, we didn't want to be a part of it. We're like, oh, my God. Somebody help this lady. And she's harassing patrons on the side of the road. You know, the whole time, I'm federal. That's not my job. So we're like, where the hell is PPB at? Nowhere to be found. You know, and it's because at that point in time, they had diminished half the police force. And it's a big city. And there's a lot of suburbs for those officers to patrol in. And it is a lot of crime, a tremendous amount of crime. Crickets, nobody to do anything. If I'm correct, I believe two of my guys actually had to get out of their cars and chase the lady off the street. But once again, if you have to deal with her, you got to hook her. You got to handcuff her, you got to search her, and she's naked, most likely has some sort of a disease. And they'll spit on you, they'll try and bite you and fight you. And now you got this naked creature that you're struggling with, and you got to put her in your car and then take her downtown if they'll take her or not. That was an everyday scenario for us. Everyday scenario, you know, and the amount of protesters, and they call them protesters, right? The amount of domestic terrorists that would show up, and you would have to deal with these people, extremely violent, cowards to the last bit of them, but extremely violent, filled full of maliciousness. And we would be dealing with them on our level, you know, to the extent that we more or less had to act as local law enforcement at times. Because the local law enforcement just wasn't there, wasn't out in force. And for the most part, to be honest with you, was not enforcing the law. Not to the extent that they should have been. And how many different times do we need to be reminded of how many different protests and riots where people were kept awake until 3 or 4 in the morning? All the noises. You know, we're out, they start a riot, police have to come and respond and disperse the crowd, and then police get blamed. Well, how many different times have we said this as well? Where are you at, citizens of Portland or Oregon? Come out and defend your city. You think I want to be here deployed half the damn year to take care of your problem? Support your police. That's what they're telling you now. Did your police support you? Whenever Antifa was going down your street, when they were harassing people, chasing people out of the town, shutting down businesses, threatening churches. You know, one of the saddest things I remember seeing is how many churches had Black Lives Matter flags. Because if you flew a Black Lives Matter flag in your business or on your church, Antifa wouldn't target it and would leave it alone. The cowardice. The absolute cowardice in people. But at the same time, if law enforcement's not going to come and do what they are paid to do, which is protect you, what are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to just bend to the whim of your new masters of Antifa? Stand out there and fight, potentially get arrested and prosecuted by the local police and the DA, which happened. Very hard answers. And now, how convenient, The police chief now says, well, things have gotten so out of control that I'm actually having to get on Twitter and saying, hey, simmer down. Calm down, Portland. Quit fighting your police so much. Maybe, maybe, just maybe, if the Portland Police Bureau went hard against crime, didn't tolerate anything from the pettiness that always escalated to the most violent of crimes, just maybe, if you didn't give all the druggies their drugs, just maybe if you didn't give them the access to the needles and the crack pipes, which they did, then maybe Portland would be a little bit safer. Maybe if PPB put officers every couple of blocks walking and patrolling, and I mean not as one officer or two, put it back to 10. Make it a small riot team. People would get the message. Why doesn't this same thing happen in a town like, let's say, Fort Worth, Texas? And, you know, this is my example because it's my local town. But Antifa does not show up in Fort Worth, Texas. And I can count on my hand probably five times. Yeah, maybe five times that they've actually decided to show up, and it's always been peaceful. They go to Dallas, always violent. They can get away with it in the Democratic cities. The conservative cities, I'm not even going to say Republican anymore. It's just conservative because the Republicans have turned into cowards. But the conservative cities, I remember when they tried going down 7th Street and tried causing a ruckus for that. And we were actually staged right down the road at the federal building to assist and to be there in case anything happened to our federal building. They went hard. They beat them poor people up, and it was funny to watch. But guess what? Antifa never showed back up. Fort Worth, let it be known, you can protest, you can chant, you can be mad, but the moment graffiti starts and the moment all this other stuff starts, we're shutting you down hard. And they did. You know? And good on Fort Worth for doing it. You know, your police chief locked arms with Black Lives Matter and kowtowed to them. So I would suggest probably looking into it, you know, eventually getting someone else new in supervision. Because we can't tolerate that. We can't tolerate that. Law enforcement has to be very by the numbers. Law enforcement has to be as constitutional gets. You know, if there ever was a entity, a group of people that said that they were constitutionalist, you would think it would be law enforcement. Because that's literally what we're there to do, is uphold the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. But instead, law enforcement has turned very much against the oath that we originally created to take. And now law enforcement is considered to be a hindrance, even to the extent that law enforcement is considered to be a threat against we the people, against our rights. And obviously, that's not a blanket statement. Obviously, I'm talking about certain federal agencies used by the Department of Justice. Maybe even to the extent of, let's do this. Let's do some homework. If you lived in a city that saw riots and the law enforcement did nothing except allow a partial amount of your city to burn down because they were told to stand down, you have a problem. Now, I know that's obvious for most people, but that problem needs to be addressed with lawsuits. And the law enforcement who are there, man, I don't even know what to say to you. You know, I think eventually it's going to need to get down to the fact that we don't just need a separation from church and state. We need a separation from law enforcement and lawmakers. Because the lawmakers, the politicians, are the ones who dictate to law enforcement what actions they will take. Let's see if this makes sense. Let's make a scenario. This is a made-up scenario. If a group of people were walking down the street and indiscriminately shooting all white people, and the mayor told law enforcement for that area to stand down and not do anything, what do you think would happen? Well, obviously, lots of lawsuits. People would be locked up because it's an act of murder. Then again, what happened in Uvalde? But let's change the scenario now. Let's say a group of people are protesting, which turns into a riot, and then they only attack Hispanic businesses in the Hispanic district of your town. And law enforcement was told to stand down while businesses burned. What do you think would happen? What do you think would happen if it was the Chinese district, if you had a Chinatown, or if it was, you know, whatever group of people district? Everybody would be up in arms about it. But why aren't people up in arms on the fact that Black Lives Matter burned down mainly black businesses? And these are the same people that want that vote from the Democratic Party that told the law enforcement that you pay for from your taxes to protect your business to stand down and let your business burn, and then they demand your vote. Because if you don't vote for me, you ain't black, to quote a certain president. Let's continue with this article. This post comes after officers in the city have had multiple violent encounters over the last week, including an incident in which a suspect who had been confronted by officers sped off, hitting two police cruisers and almost running over a downed officer. That is Portland. According to reporting from KGW, officers in that incident were responding to reports of gunfire near an apartment complex, locating a suspect in a truck before the suspect fled. One officer fired at the suspect as the truck sped through the police cruisers, though it was unclear if the driver had been injured because he was able to elude police and escape. In a similar incident, an officer was badly injured and hospitalized after a stolen vehicle investigation that resulted in the suspect running over the officer in the vehicle. Hours earlier, officers were involved in a physical altercation with a domestic violence suspect. Video of the incident appears to show the suspect pulling out a gun and perhaps firing a shot, resulting in one officer opening fire on the man and killing him. And to quote Portland Police Bureau officer Derek Carman, "It's beginning to get frustrating for the officers, and hopefully members of the community are getting frustrated as well." Now, I think, unless this guy is a leftist stooge, he measured his words very well. Because when I was there, Portland Police Bureau wasn't even allowed to say hi to those of us, the bad guys in DHS. Even though we were out there, you know, taking names and kicking asses. And I can't tell you how many different times Portland Police Bureau called upon us to rescue them when they were being overwhelmed by a crowd. And gladly we did it, and gladly we would do it again. But the failure wasn't at the individual officer level. It was at the supervision level. And listen, guys, to what extent do we say, okay, if my leadership is going to put my life in danger and not help me and only hinder me, then maybe we as a whole don't listen to this supervisor and we enforce the law and carry it out to the full extent of what our authority is, based on what a reasonable officer would do, not allow ourselves to be chased down the street. And I can't tell you how many times I saw that happen, where they were literally chased down the street because, not because the individual officers wanted to turn their backsides to a riotous crowd, but because supervision said, that's what you need to do. There's a difference between a tactical withdrawal and just turning and running. You know, in my mind, in law enforcement right now, if you don't own the street during a riot, then maybe you should go be a firefighter. That's our job. Our job's to own the street. When they walk around saying, whose streets? Our streets. Bullshit. Not when we went out. Your streets were our streets. And we made sure of that. We rubbed it in your face. You aren't going to burn down these businesses. You aren't going to destroy these buildings. But this was, you know, and this was the problem that we shared with PPB, was that as federal, we could only go as far as we were allowed to go off of federal property unless we were being engaged by the crowd. If we were being engaged by the crowd, we will push you all the way to the halls of the mayor's office, of city council. And there was one night where we actually did push the crowd over 12 blocks because they kept engaging with us and they would not break away. And it's not like we were trying to run people down. We were just standing there, you know, creating a defensive perimeter around the courthouse and just kept taking barrage after barrage. And, you know, whenever we say, hey, this has now been declared a riot, disperse, we give that announcement 3 or 4 times, it's time to disperse. And if not, you're going to get your ass kicked if you're still, you know, hanging around. And a lot of Antifa didn't think that DHS would do it, and we did. And by DHS, I mean the Federal Protective Service, the uniformed police for the federal government, comprised of 99% of veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. We had a certain mindset about us. We weren't going to be bullied. We weren't going to be embarrassed. We were going to do things by the numbers and without mercy and without remorse. And people didn't get injured unless they were in direct confrontation with us. We gave as much force as possible right there at the front, so that way we didn't have to go to that extreme amount of force there at the end, like deadly use of force. We never had to do that, even though we took attempted deadly force situations numerous times. It's a miracle no one ever pulled out their gun and shot into the crowd, knowing what I know. That's the cities that you live in now. Portland is just one example of this. New York is worse. New York is worse. There was just recently a 16-year-old on camera fighting two officers. Actually, apparently beat one of them pretty bad. Released that night. No bail. No bond. Bye. Back to the street. Is this really the America that you want, Americans? Well, it's the America that you've got. And it's the America you're going to get. Donald Trump, even when he was elected, couldn't root out that evil. And whoever becomes elected again, if they're conservative, won't root it out either. Because it's at the local level. That's where local politics have so much weight. And that's why people need to be involved with their local politics. You need to be on top of your local politicians. Audit them every month. I don't care. Make them be honest. Here's another part of this article. The frustration for Portland's police officers has been building for 2 years. Yeah, 2020. Absolutely. With the city being one of the epicenters of nationwide protests following the death of George Floyd. Those demonstrations often turned violent. Shit, yes, they did. They turned violent all the time. And I mean a violent that a lot of people, y'all don't understand. You know, here's a little science experiment. Don't do what I'm about to say. I'm being sarcastic. But here's a science experiment for you. Go tell the Democrats, here's a slingshot. Here's a steel ball bearing. There's another one of your Democratic buddies. Shoot them in the face with it. Oh, by the way, then their throat, then their extremities, then their genitals. Man, I mean, it may sound funny, but I had guys that got hit that had to go to the hospital. Not cool. Oh, here's another one. Go take you a can of Campbell's soup. Seemed to be one of their most favorite types of soup. They'd always say it's for their family. That's why they're walking around with backpacks filled full of soup cans. And I want you to aim at each other's shins, like how they aimed at us, and hit each other in the shin with the soup can. See if you can catch it right on the edge. We had people literally go down for it. Here's another one. Get you on a good football helmet. Get about 20 pounds worth of concrete and throw it at each other's heads. See who can get the concussion first. We had a young lady, she was an officer, little bitty thing, and just as fierce as could be. She got hit twice in the head. Thank God she had her helmet on. Of course, we always went out with a full protective gear. But she got hit and almost knocked unconscious. Where's the Democrats consoling about that? Where's the Republicans consoling about it? You know, us as her brothers, we were worried about her. But your politicians never sent a letter. Your politicians never said, hey, how's that person doing? They don't care. We were just numbers. Just as you are just a number compared to them. You're a tax revenue. That's what they look at you as. Your rescue is not coming, America. Donald Trump is not going to rescue this country. And I hope the man runs and, you know, if he wins, great. If Ron DeSantis runs and he wins, great. Ron DeSantis will not rescue this country. We have one person who can rescue this country. And half the people don't believe he exists or more. And the other half that believe in our Lord don't even abide by his law. So expect the country to get worse. Expect crime to get worse. Expect the violent protests to be more frequent. Expect the economy to fail. Expect the food lines to get long when you're waiting for your weekly rations. I remember waiting in those lines when I was in, high school, during Katrina and Rita hurricanes. I'm going to be putting on a course that is going to be training people how to survive, not just the active shooter scenario, but the coming attack on this country. That's going to be a complete breakdown of society. It will be probably some of the most enlightening training you've ever taken. I'm not a hype guy. I'm not one of these, you know, macho man kind of guys where I'm going to scream and yell at people. That's just not just me. I've never been that guy. When we put on training, I talk to people just like this. If I have to yell at you, it's because you're an idiot or I'm trying to make the scenario worse to get your adrenaline up. But, you know, this is going to be a course for anyone. Basic, intermediate, and advanced. If you've never shot a firearm and you want to come to this course, come to it. If you have intermediate experience with it, come to it. If you have advanced experience, come to it, because I'm going to put you through scenario-based training that typically military doesn't get and only law enforcement gets. And there's a reason why law enforcement survives active shooters much more than civilians. There's a mindset in the training. There's a way that we teach you how to look for things. I'm going to teach you to look for things the way law enforcement does. To the extent, I'm going to give you a taste, an example of law enforcement basic training. And it's one of the reasons why American law enforcement is actually so successful at fighting crime. Because of the experience that we have. Because of the training that we get. Not everybody's the same, and I get that. But I'm going to train you to the extent that you will know when someone is about to do something, and you will know what to do next. Here's an example, all right? This is going to be posted up on my website today, www.AmericanVindictaShow.com. Active Shooter Awareness and Reaction Course. So the course will provide the student the ability to better handle the ever-changing and dynamic scenario of a mass killing or active shooter. This course is designed for the student to be provided with the history of past active shooter incidents, understanding the basic medical applications of how to stop the bleeding and how to deal with shock for various wounds. It's going to teach you various use of force scenarios, put you through a lot of different trainings so that you're going to see a lot of different things. It's not a flat range where you're killing a paper target. There's going to be team building exercises where we're going to have a lot of fun, and it's going to be challenging, but it's going to be fun and realistic. We're going to have single man and team room clearing techniques, and we're going to have some fight for life scenarios that will push the students beyond comfort level. But you don't have to be Special Forces Ranger qualified to come and take this course and to excel at it. Now, there have been people of various age groups who have contacted me about this training, from those in their 60s to those who have just, you know, recently had some surgeries. Listen, if you don't think you can't have the active shooter a couple days after recovery from, you know, a major surgery, you're wrong. It can happen. I'm not saying if you just got back surgery to come out here to this course, but if you are in, you know, decent everyday person shape, you will excel at this course. This course is to make you think. It's to give you scenarios you've never experienced before in case you do experience them. This is one of the things that we train as use of force instructors on law enforcement. In case you've ever been in the George Floyd scenario, we're going to run you through it. That way you see it from the officer's perspective. If you have questions on what happened in Uvalde, I'm going to recreate the scenario. And the students who show up are going to be the responding officers. And they're going to see what we see. They're going to see inaction and action. And the differences in both. You are going to be comfortable with clearing a room, which is not, you know, that's nothing that is a secret. You know, you can get on YouTube and you can look all this stuff up, but I promise you, getting the hands-on experience with someone like me and Jamie Walden, we have like almost 50 years of combined experience. It's one of a kind. Most courses that are going to teach what I'm going to teach are a day or two long and cost $900. That's your average. This is 3 days long, $600. $50 goes to Bob Griswold at Ready Made Resources, and that's for the generator that we're going to have to use out at the facility, and that's for like porta potties. I want you to understand that what you're going to be putting, I'm going to be putting you through, is to save your life the day you need the training. You can at least revert back to it. I'm going to put you in scenarios that have been known across the country and see how you respond. Teach you how I respond to it. Jamie is going to teach you his techniques. I'm going to teach you mine. We have a very similar mindset, very similar background. So you're not going to get any conflicting training techniques or training scars. And law enforcement is filled with training scars, by the way. So that's where the mixture of having someone who's had combat experience and senior years into law enforcement, like me, 10 years into law enforcement, you know, I meld it very well together in this application. It's not the first time I've taught people before. It won't be the last. I still have people reaching out to me now, wanting private training. But I want people to be safe. I want people to feel good about their training and to walk away saying, I learned something and I have a confidence boost in my skills. Most people are not going to get that from your local training. You're just not going to. All right? What I'm doing is putting people on a whole different level. You can get very good at shooting your rifle, your pistol, your shotgun from a flat range. Go to those guys, learn those skills. This is the how to survive a shooting class. That's why we're using airsoft guns, because you're going to get into an airsoft gun fight with a bad guy. You're going to clear rooms and have to run the rabbit. You're going to have to be the one man or the two man. You're going to have to go force on force with somebody else. You're going to feel a little bit of pain. It's not bad for you. But these are skills that you can apply in your home when you wake up in the middle of the night after you hear your door kicked in. That is the difference in what I'm doing and what a lot of other people are doing. I'm trying to build up that confidence. And once again, I'm not talking bad about any instructor that's out there or any course that's out there. That's not my prerogative. I'm just telling you that what I'm bringing to the table is truly life-saving. Now, this course will be physically demanding. You're not going to be doing push-ups and jumping jacks, and you're not going to be doing gas mask runs, but you will be moving your body, all right? You will be in a mock fight with somebody. And listen, you know, you can be from all spectrums of life and still have to fight people, but at least have a confidence boost by learning the skills now before you're having to do it in real life and fighting for your life and never pushed yourself to that extent. I'm going to give you a taste of it. That way you can know in your mind that you can do this. That's the confidence that I'm putting in people. And it will work. You will come out of this training feeling very confident in your skills, and you will be able to pass this on to others. Now, this is a minimalist course, because most likely you will have a minimal amount of gear on you during an active shooter. All right? Most likely you'll just have a pistol and maybe a spare magazine. However, it is strongly advised to bring body armor due to the fact that armor changes the entire way that you stand with a rifle, with a pistol, and with how you move your body, how you shoot, how you communicate with people. It really does change everything. That's why we always say train the way you fight, train in full gear, right? You know, you're obviously not going to be like the guy that was at the mall recently that put down the bad guy from 40 yards in full gear. However, think of this also as when prophecy hits the fan, have the ability to say, I've got the reps in. I know that, you know, I'm carrying too much gear. My gear is not working for me. This vest doesn't work for me. And let us evaluate your gear. Let us evaluate your helmets. If you got them, bring them. You know, let us evaluate the way you have your rifles and your pistols set up and your holsters and your magazine pouches. And we will sort you out. This is not a bravado class. That does not come with me. I don't care about bravado. I care about results. That's all I care about. Now, you're going to get the repetitions in your gear, and that's probably one of the best things that you can do if you bring full gear. If not, that's completely fine. This course will not be, like I said, not be really too demanding, but you will get involved in the scenario-based training where airsoft pistols and airsoft rifles will be used on force-on-force training. and it's going to be fun. I'm providing the guns. I'm providing the ammunition. I'm for the airsoft, not your ammunition, by the way. The airsoft pistols, the airsoft rifles, the masks, I'm providing that. All right, so if you want to come, you're going to have a lot of fun. Now, this course will be about teaching tactical techniques for dealing with active shooter situations, but it's not just active shooters. All right? If someone breaks into your house, you're going to know what to do. If you are getting mugged at your car, you are going to know what to do. We're going to cover a variety of things here. This course is meant for all shooters of all experiences. Now, like I said, it's a 3-day session, and we'll meet daily from about 9 a.m., and then we'll have some breaks during the day. We'll see how we can do with going to some nighttime stuff. I do want to do at least one low-light shoot, so one nighttime shoot involving your flashlights, your weapon system lights, if you have them on your pistol, if you have them on your rifle, or handheld flashlight shooting techniques. Most people never get that chance, and they never get the training from law enforcement anyways. So here's your chance. Learn to shoot how we do. All right, here's a gear list for people if you're interested. Pistol. The magazines for the pistol, right? Typically, you know, what I tell people is just bring 3 or 4 magazines for your pistol. That way you're not having to punch mags all day long. Make sure you have a good holster, a good sturdy pistol belt, not a flimsy belt. All right, you can go to Amazon, you can look up leather shooting belts, they're like $50. I always implore people to have Kydex holsters and not leather holsters, and I'll explain to everyone why if someone shows up with a leather holster. If you want to, and it's not a necessary, but if you want to, bring your rifle. If you're going to bring your rifle, at least have the 3 to 5 magazines and a rifle sling. You know, I will let you get repetitions in with your gear, and that is very, very valuable information for you, because we're constantly trying to gain information on ourselves, on our skill set here. Ballistic helmet and body armor. If you got it, bring it. And it's not a requirement. Long sleeves and or a thick shirt, a thick long sleeve shirt for protection against the airsoft projectiles. They do hurt. Okay, they're not paintballs. They don't hurt that bad. And I do have a little bit of protective equipment, but that's where having the shooter's gloves to protect your little phalanges, having a light jacket or a long sleeve shirt, that will probably be very recommended. Pants. If you want to train in shorts, by all means, be that guy. I always tell people just wear comfortable pants. A hat to protect you from the sun, eye protection, obviously to protect your eyeballs, hearing protection. By hearing protection, what I really mean is, if you can, electronic hearing protection, so that way you can hear commands from the instructors on the firing line. Boots, shoes, I don't care. Wear active footwear. So if you're wearing your Go-Fasters, you know, those are cool, do it. I don't care. Just don't show up in flip-flops and sandals, because that could be a chance to have an injury, and we don't want that. Water source. It's going to be the beginning of September. It's going to be hot. So make sure you bring in a Camelback or some sort of water source with you. Flashlight, handheld flashlight, and weapon light for low-light shooting. The ammunition. Listen, guys, we're going to be really involved in the training, learning aspect. We are going to be shooting, but you don't need to bring a tremendous amount of rounds. You know, probably, just to be safe, 300 rifle, 300 pistol. You know, 300 rounds per weapon system. We probably won't shoot that much. All right. The ammunition source. So your magazines should have a magazine pouch. I recommend people to have a magazine pouch on you. That way you can get the reps in and have multiple magazines on you whenever we're shooting. All right. You can stuff them in your pockets if you like, but you know, that's your own prerogative. We typically have our stuff set up so that we have a shooter's belt where we have our magazine pouches on the off hand. So that's the weak side hand, And then our strong side hand is obviously where the pistol and holster will be. So that's typically how we have that set up. If you got any questions about that, just email me at AmericanVindictusShow@gmail.com. I'll set you straight. So the lead instructor will be myself. The guest instructor will be Jamie Walden. The first day is going to be fun. We're going to have a long briefing on active shooter awareness and reaction PowerPoint. I'm going to break down all the stuff that I can know that I know and that I can tell you about active shooters, about all the different terrorist attacks that have happened around the world that law enforcement prepares for. Give you a bunch of examples of what law enforcement sees and has to deal with. That way, as a civilian, you'll know what we're doing, why we're doing things a certain way, because if you get yourself caught up in an active shooter situation and law enforcement is approaching you, you're going to know why I tell you to react the way I want you to. Also, this is information for you to see that there is quite the similarity between active shooters. And I'm not going to get into that. I'll save it for the PowerPoint. In between all that, we're going to be, you know, we're going to be going over weapons and tactics. We're going to be doing some of the room clearing on the first day. We're going to have introduction to basic weapons handling and tactics. We're going to have the basic room clearing tactics, single man and teams. And the last day, the last hours of the day, we're going to have a last man standing team match, which is more or less you and someone else are going to get to be in a gunfight with each other. And I'm going to save the rest for that day. Once again, we're using airsoft guns, but it's going to be fun. And with that, there's going to be a lot of medical training. And we're going to have a special forces 18 Delta guy who's going to be there to assist us with the medical training, and he's going to be teaching us what he knows. You talk about invaluable information. Jamie Walden was also an EMT, so he's going to be giving you invaluable information on the medical application of how to treat wounds, what gear we use. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to have questions and answers, and we're going to hang out probably for quite a while and sit around and talk about all the different scenarios, all the different stuff that's happening politically around the world and preparation and survival. And you'll just be able to sit there and ask us questions and we'll give you honest answers. All right. We're not trying to sell books. We're just trying to meet and greet with people and to train you what we know. The second day, we're going to do a lot of use of force and training, a lot of use of force scenario training. We're going to do de-escalation training, something that law enforcement does that most of the time civilians don't know anything about. We're going to get back on the room clearing. This is going to be more force-on-force training. We're going to have live fire range, so that's going to be your basic fundamentals of marksmanship. So that's just basically, you know, if you got a problem with shooting your pistol or a problem with your rifle, we're going to be there to assist you. And that's also going to include weapon manipulation drills, going from rifle to pistol or from pistol to rifle. You know, if you have a slide lock reload on your rifle and, you know, you need to immediately dump that and go to your pistol and you've never trained that way before, the John Wick style shooting, we're going to be there to assist you with that, right? No pressure. No one's standing over your shoulder intimidating you. That's not what we're about. That's not how people learn, okay? We're there to make sure that you learn. This isn't boot camp. We're going to be going over speed reloads and tactical reload drills. We'll do a little bit of competitions with that. That's always fun. And honestly, here's another thing. For anyone who is very basic and you don't have any training, this course is highly recommended for you. All right. If you're lagging behind on the training, we will get you up to speed very quickly. Very, very quickly. I took a guy who has never shot pistols in his life, and within 4 hours of training, this guy felt so confident that he went back home and started shooting 3-gun matches and doing very well. It doesn't take much to teach you the basic fundamentals. And once you got it and you train with it, and I'll let everyone manipulate and play with these airsoft guns and tell you about why it's so good to have them and use them, you will become an excellent shooter. We're going to have an introduction to advanced shooting techniques with rifle and pistol. That's going to be a lot of fun too. And that is really geared towards the worst case scenario. You know, we're invaded by freaking Russia and China and aliens and the lizard people from the moon, as David Icke likes to talk about. You know, this is the worst case scenario training. So we're going to give you a taste of that. We're going to have low light shooting. So that's, you know, once again, using your flashlights and your weapon lights. And then we're going to wrap it up with questions and answers. The third day, we're going to have an introduction to barricade shooting, shooting around walls, shooting around cars, shooting around different objects. We're going to teach you about concealment, teach you about cover, and moving from one to the other. We're going to show you how we run. And we're going to put you through those drills so that you'll know why we mean get low and run. That is probably where you'll have the most physical exertion. But once again, this isn't a 40-yard dash. And even if you have problems, we can walk you through it. That way you at least get the repetitions in. Okay? You never know when you may need that. We're going to teach you how to move as a team. We're going to teach you a little bit of moving to contact. Now, that's something that's geared highly to the military, but don't think it can't happen within your everyday life, right? And really, that's a mindset-building exercise. Communication as a team. We're going to show you why communicating as a team works very well and how to do that. That's why I suggest if you're local law enforcement, you don't get this type of training, guys, come out. Come out. You know, you are going to learn. And not only that, but you get to work with civilians and you get to tell them about what it is that you do and you see every day. If you are part of a church security team and you're a security member of that team and you want to come out and get this training, please email me. AmericanVindictaShow@gmail.com. Let's get you hooked up. Finally, we're going to end the third day with an active shooter simulation and reaction. I'm not going to tell you what that scenario is going to be. It's going to be a good surprise for you, but it's going to hit home to a lot of people, and it's probably going to put the blood pressure up. But that is the scenario-based training that very few people get anymore or even give out. So, the class costs $600 per person. All right. I wish I could lower the price. I really do. Hopefully, eventually I will. Right now, you know, this is how we make a living. This is my first class to teach since being out of law enforcement. So I'm very excited. Most of you who know me, you know, most likely I'm a very humble person. I'm not a screamer. I'm not a yeller. I joke around quite a bit. I do take a lot of things very seriously, but I have that graveyard sense of humor. And once again, maybe that's something else you can pick up and you'll understand that warrior ethos, which is really what we're here to do. We're here to turn the regular men and women into what the Viking term of wrecker means. The Viking term of wrecker means a regular person who is a warrior by calling, not a soldier by trade. I can take anyone and become and make them into a soldier, but not everybody becomes the warrior. With this course, I want to instill upon this country the ability to bring back that warrior spirit, that warrior ethos, and that camaraderie that we have as warriors and as sons and daughters of the Most High and Mighty God. Our God tells us that He is a man of war. I think we should follow in the Father's footsteps. If you want to be able to sign up, you can go to readymaderesources.com. At the top of the website, there's a banner there. It says click here, scroll down, and you'll see the active shooter reaction awareness course on there. You can also call 800-627-3809 and talk to Bob Griswold and sign up. There's still plenty of seats available. Once again, this is the beginning of September. So it'll be 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. So that means Thursday would be the day that you probably want to get there, because we're going to be starting Friday at 9 a.m. And then Monday is going to be a travel day. So Thursday and Monday will be travel days. All this stuff is going to be on my website. It'll be up there today. And I haven't talked about this very much. Maybe that's my fault. But I want people to understand that you do have people out there in your corner that are from the law enforcement community, that are veterans, that want to teach civilians, and that want former cops, retired cops, former military guys and gals. If y'all want to get back in the action and have some fun with me, come out to this course. All right, I plan on teaching this course multiple times throughout the year. Eventually, I'm going to get this to where I can put this show on the road and come to organizations who want this type of training, because there may come a day where you may actually need it. I hope not. I really hope not. But this is a perishable skill if you know it, and it is a life-saving skill if you don't. All right, that's all I got for you today. Ladies and gentlemen, my name's Doug Thornton. You've been listening to the American Vindictus Show. Stay frosty. The enemy's out there. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.